comments made on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 91, accessible games with sound for the blind. This is Michael Loft, and this Tech Chat, actually, I would say is part one, because certainly we can't cover all that's going on in blind gaming in an hour, but we have a great group of guests this evening. Joining us first is Liam Irvin with LWorks.com. How you doing, Liam?
Hey, Mike. It's good to be here.
Everyone hear each of your voices so they kind of know who you are. You're making affordable games, and you just did an update to Super Egg Hunt, and we'll talk to you about all your games. Also joining us, Michael Fair. Is he a creator and original editor of Odyssey magazine? Michael, thanks for joining us this evening.
That's my pleasure. Hello, everyone.
All right. And also Michael Forzano with RS Games, of course, makers of Monopoly, Uno, Blackjack, and Yahtzee. Thanks, Michael, for joining
us. Hey, everyone. Glad to be here.
Coming up in Podcast 62, we're not going to cover it tonight because we did a pre-recorded interview, but we have an interview with Davey and Arion of PlayingInTheDark.net and makers of Top Speed 3. We'll talk about that as well as their future plans for the game and side-scroller action or something else they want to get into. So we'll find out more about that. Let's start with Michael Forzano. Your four games, you know, what you're offering, kind of when you began RS Games and what you're doing with it now.
RS Games, the whole idea pretty much started when I had the idea that it would be great to be able to play Monopoly online against, you know, people all over the world. And I had the idea for a client and server idea, you know, that would allow you to easily connect, play Monopoly, and, you know, play against other people. And, we started developing that in August of 2009, I think, and developed that all through the remainder of 2009, and December 2009, we released the first version of Monopoly, and it was, right away, it was a big hit. It was so much more popular than I ever anticipated. Like, you know, I spread it on Twitter, and immediately started, like, picking up, like, everybody was playing it. It was the big thing. I was like, wow, and, you know, it was great. You could play Monopoly against anyone all over the world. You know, it's convenient. You could just start the client, you know, enter in your account info, and you'd be able to just connect and play. So then, I would say about a month later, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if you could do this same concept with other games, like not just Monopoly. Like, you could actually connect, enter in your account info, and then choose a game to play, like, from one convenient program without having to even download different, like, in the past it was like all one play where you'd have to, like, download a different program for each game. But I was, you know, I came up thought about this idea, and me and the rest of the team, that's Ryan Smith, Jason Smith, and Derek Roberts, who helps out with the Linux stuff behind the scenes. So you know, we started developing this, and originally the plan was to not port Monopoly over to this, but as it progressed and came up with the whole protocol that would allow you to play these games, and I decided, well, we'll be able to actually port Monopoly over to this. So, and I started developing the second game called Uno, the Uno card game, which was also very popular. So we worked on that throughout the year until the summer when we finally released it. And another main thing about what's now known as the RS Games client is it's cross-platform. So we have the Windows version, the Mac version, the Linux version, and the web client, which can be played from any web browser, including on iOS devices, which is pretty cool. You know, I'll talk about that later. We want to do an iPhone app, but that may not be possible and probably won't happen anytime soon if it ever does. So we added Uno Monopoly, and that was also a big hit. We released that in September 2010, and you know, there's always ongoing bug fixes and everything. We released several patches to the client and the server. The main thing about the Ars games is for simple for a bug fix in the game. It's just a matter of modifying the server code, and there's no need to download a new client. You can just continue playing your original client. Well, we've released a few patches with, you know, client fixes, but mainly, you know, the updates we've done on the server. You know, we send out an announcement saying we fixed this bug, and that's it. You can continue playing with the bug fix.
So really, you are a cloud-based game in a sense?
Yes. There's nothing... It downloads the sounds when you start playing the new game. It downloads the sounds, so you have the sounds stored in your hard drive. When we add auto-login, you'll have your a user ID thing stored in your hard drive, but that's all that's stored there. Everything else is on the server. All the games, your account info, everything's on the server.
Now, you're also cross-platform on Mac and Linux. Was that hard to do? Or?
Yeah, it was actually very hard, especially the Mac, because it's just... Yeah, with the Mac, we had to go back and forth with a mailing list for about a month, you know, just trying to get it to even compile. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole different... You know, I guess Apple was... I mean, we coded the client in a language called Python, and it does have a Mac version, but I don't think that's a common thing to develop in Python on the Mac. So it was a lot of tinkering and messing and going back and forth with very helpful mailing list, but eventually we did get it to compile. Linux wasn't that hard, but there's still some issues with it. Like, I think most of them are fixed now, but they were crashing on exit and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I imagine someone will ask you before the night's over about iOS if you're going to get into that space. So anyway, you got four games, and you got Blackjack, and you got Yahtzee that you brought out recently.
We added Blackjack, and Yahtzee came out around Christmas time. Those have been very good. And we plan to add new games in the future. That's the whole point of this, that we're able to add on new games, you know, without any user having to do anything. The games just... You know, we can even give certain accounts access to the game so our beta testers can play the game. So it's just a matter of enabling the game so it appears in your menu and it'll download the sounds for you and you can play.
Okay, very good. Well, we're going to talk to Liam here and Michael Fair, and then we're going to take some questions. Liam, you got L-Works. How long you been doing gaming? Kind of give a little history. What did you start with and where are you now?
Mike, I actually started about 10 years ago. I started back in high school, and I grew up playing video games. And I said, you know, it would be wonderful if I could create my own video game. It was something I always wanted to do. And, you know, I started in high school learning languages. I started with Visual Basic and realized, hey, you know, this might actually be possible. And so I started making games. The first game I ever made was a little game called Super Shot, which was kind of like Bop It. And amazingly enough, it really is the one that seems to be like one of the more requested games. People ask me where it went and stuff, and it was an old project. And then I made a game called Super Liam, which, of course, besides being named after me, which I guess is kind of big-headed of me, it was a thing I always wanted to do. I always wanted to make a game called Super Liam because it was the character I created when I was like 5. And I said, you know, if I could do this, I will have really accomplished a life goal. And so a lot of people look at Super Liam and go, oh, you made a game named after yourself. That's so lame. But, you know, for me, it was really cool because it was a goal that I had set that I was able to complete. I released some other games. I've released a game called Judgment Day, which is kind of like Space Invaders. Think Space Invaders meets World War III. Also, and we, you know, touched on it, I think, earlier, Super Egg Hunt, which is probably, believe it or not, my most popular game, just got a facelift a few weeks ago, and it's a really simple game. You run around a grid, you collect beeping Easter eggs. If you're familiar with the Pioneer Easter egg gathering they used to do, I think they still do them, but Tell Pioneers makes those beeping Easter eggs, and they would put them out in the big field, and the little blind kids could run around and pick up Easter eggs. And that's actually where I got the idea from. It just kind of hit me one day. And so I built this game, and it's really taken off.
Okay, now this Super Liam is a side-scroller, right? Explain that. What is that?
Okay, if you're familiar with Mario, and even if you're not, let me kind of explain what a side-scroller is. Imagine that you were walking only forwards and backwards, and to do so, you would, like, on an analog pad, you'd press left or right. You could jump over obstacles, shoot things, of course, like in Mario, you had the firepower, you'd spit fireballs. Super Liam is a similar concept. You run through different themed levels. And the cool thing, and I mean, now it's not anymore, but at the time, Super Liam was the first side-scroller. It was the first to do this, and I mean, it's as simplistic as it looks now. It was very revolutionary for its time because it was something that no one had ever tried. It was like, wow, this is an idea that not only have I tried it, but it works pretty well. And, it's just kind of cool, and it's really neat to go, yeah, I did something neat. I made a platformer. I made this concept, and I was really proud of that.
That is pretty awesome. I mean, what is there a certain language you use, or do you have three different languages? What do you code your games in that works for you?
What I'm doing is I had written my games in Visual Basic, and one of the problems that I've run into is that Visual Basic, especially Visual Basic 6, is old. And for those who use Windows 7, you've probably noticed a lot of your VB games don't run well because Microsoft has made Visual Basic 6 runtime's legacy. So I've switched over, and I get a lot of flack for this. I've switched over to a language called BGT, and it was designed to essentially expedite the process. I don't want to say expedite, but let's just say simplify the process of creating audio-based games. You can actually use it for other applications. I've created a couple other non-gaming things with it. But, it was made primarily to do audio gaming. And one of the nice things about it is you spend less time coding subsystems and more time actually creating a game. And so Super Egg Hunt, to convert from VB6 to BGT, went really quickly because instead of having to write all these systems, they're pretty much already there. And I've written some things that I use myself now. One of the cool things that Super Egg Hunt does is it auto updates. And this works 99% of the time. There's a couple of, bugs I got to work out, but we're getting there. And the way it works is you run the game and it goes, hey, I've got an update for you. And it goes, grabs it, and you can play. And this makes it simpler because then you don't have to go grabbing a new setup file every time, which is very frustrating, especially for larger games. And I want to expand this so that if there's new sounds, it'll go grab those. If it's got to grab some other data, it can get that. So it's a learning process. People have been really supportive. It's been very frustrating at times, but I've really had awesome support from the community. And the other cool thing that we're doing too is we do a message of the day where when you start the game, if there's a new message for you to hear, it plays. So I can announce things like, okay, who's got the highest scores, or there's a new game out, or, maybe, hey, Merry Christmas, or Happy Holidays, or various things. I mean, and what's cool is it gets you more in touch with your community, because the last thing I want to do is be behind this curtain, this iron curtain of like, oh, I'm a developer, and, I'm on the outside, and I look in, and, or you look in to see what I'm doing. I'm active on Twitter. You can follow Elworks Games, and I post a lot of things that I'm working on, a lot of little audio tidbits. And a couple weeks ago, I posted some outtakes of a couple of recording sessions I did. So I try and keep people clued in, and I want people to feel like they're a part of it, because really you are. I mean, if it's not for everybody who downloads and plays, there's no games. There's no reason to be doing this. So really, it's for everybody else that I do this.
So your games don't require internet connectivity, but obviously when it's there, it can phone the stats back, and right, you can see how you're doing and other people that you're playing.
Yeah,
against.
The games don't require it. I mean, we're at the point now where I think, internet is pretty much 99% of the time you have it. Back in the older days when you were on dial-up, of course, it was different because internet was much harder to come by, and you didn't have always-on connections. If you play Super Egg Hunt without an internet connection, you can do it. You can't post your scores, and you may not have the latest version, but, these things happen. And again, there's not a 100% solution that fixes everything for everybody.
Now, you have a category here called Arcade and Logic Games. What do we have in there?
Okay. I had written a pack called the Elworks Arcade Volume 1, and it was kind of a failed attempt to create, and it's too bad that this was a failed attempt because it's something I thought would have been fun, but it just didn't catch on.
Growing up, I'm sure some of you remember the Franklin Language Master. Who doesn't remember that? And it had Word Train and all these other games. And I took a couple ideas and made some word games, made some logic games, made, if you remember the old Apple IIe, it had that music game. I think it was the music game. And you would play, it was kind of like Simon. And I actually, created something like that. And it just didn't catch on. And sometimes you'll create things that just don't go well, and that was one of them. And I don't know if it was poor design or I just didn't market it correctly. But, you know, everybody has flops, and I learned from that. And I'm sticking with what I'm good at, which is audio-based stuff.
All right, very good. We're going to take questions here in a little bit. I want to speak with you, Michael Fair. And, of course, you created an original editor of Odyssey Magazine, and I'm just kind of curious, before we go back into history, but kind of what, from your perspective, what things are people playing today? What are some of the popular audio-based games that are out there today?
Well, it's interesting because looking back, like things have developed in such a hodgepodge way. Like in video games, there's been a bit more of a progression. But for example, we've seen, say, Shades of Doom, which is a fully more 2D environment shooter where you're going through and you're going through corridors and navigating. Like that was done before we had a side scroller. Meanwhile, side scrollers you'd think would be much more straightforward to develop than some of the stuff we've seen first. So yeah, I was very relieved in a lot of ways when Liam came out with his side scroller, just to demonstrate that the concept was possible and sort of get the ball rolling with it. Finally, I thought it was long overdue by just looking back from what the sighted world had seen. And today, basically, we have, of course, the free games like Super Egg Hunt is a huge, it's Liam's really scored a big hit with that. And RS games, you see that all over, certainly in Samnet, a lot of people are playing it. That's where I notice it most, in the chat rooms. Things like that. Jim Kitchen, of course, is still hanging in there. He's one of our longest running developers. And he keeps updating his stuff and once in a while publishing something new. Amazing man. Hopefully we can get him on one of these. Quite the interesting fellow. And, of course, we have some upcoming things that, like Q9 is ongoing. It's just been updated fairly recently, back around Christmas. And a lot of new features were added to that. That's still quite popular, as far as I can tell. And, some of the games, like the pinball versions and some of those have sort of, you don't see mention of them much on the list, but I would bet they're still being played quite often. It's we've had some they were smash hits at their time. So
what about multiplayer games?
That's the next real horizon for these guys, these developers that are looking into it. We've seen some things have really surprised me, like All in Play. Now, there's a company that, and I think the secret to their success is they have it so that both blind and sighted people can really join in and play most of their games. They can play all the games, but I think in some of them, like that word one they have, that circumlocution, that sighted people would have an advantage there just in being able to rearrange the letters in their heads more easily. But they've really straddled that market between sighted and blind. And we're able to pull a lot of those customers in. So originally, that was a company I didn't think would last more than a year. And they proved me wrong stunningly. They're still around, and it's been, must be close to 10 years, if not more, by now. It's been spectacularly successful as far as that goes in accessible gaming. That's one thing people have to keep in mind, is that these developers, they're doing it mainly out of the passion for what they're doing. No one's getting rich off this. I don't think anyone's making a full living. I think the closest thing we saw to that was, well, maybe All in Play and perhaps ESP Softworks when it was still around and had most of its games out, perhaps then. But even so, like, no one gets rich off this. It's a activity of passion, really, just like Odyssey was for me.
So I want to ask Liam and Michael Verzano, I'll start with you, Michael, and kind of explain the process of developing and publishing a game. I mean, I'm curious, do you just, you're like, Liam, you just go, oh, that would be cool, and we'll just
see it and see how well it sticks and works and how many people want to take off? Or do you go based on some kind of requests and suggestions from users? Or how does that work? How do you make that decision?
I mean, it all starts with an idea, basically. Like, you got to start off, you know, having some idea of what you want to do. So when we developed Monopoly, we started out, you know, I thought the idea would be a great thing to be able to play Monopoly against other people. So then you really have to think about, how you're going to do it. You know, you have to weigh it out. What language are you going to use? Like, how are you going to do it? You know, the whole programming logistics. You need to gather sounds. You know, you need to write the code, which, you know, being a team, it's like, you know, not one person writing all the code. You know, it's, you know, I write something, you know, somebody else will write something, and, you know, some part of the code. And, you know, there's lots of testing involved because, you know, no matter how good you are, you're always going to have bugs in your code. It's not, you know, because a developer is a bad developer or anything like that. You're always going to have bugs. They always have to be resolved. You know, it's just because a computer, it reads your code logically in a certain way. You know, there's, and people, you know, when they write code, you know, make one little mistake, you know, it could change the whole way your program runs. And, or, you know, it could make the game do some, you know, odd thing, you know, that's totally out there. And you know, you have to trace down these bugs, especially with a large platform that, like, what we're running, you know, it's not, you know, always trivial to trace down these bugs. And,
well, then there's all the...
What'd you say?
They say there's all the variables that you can't predict until you put it out to the masses of different operating systems, Intel versus AMD, different sound cards and drivers.
You know, different people. I mean, even with, like, we had a testing team. We always do that, you know, I don't know. Right now it's like 20 people, but back when we were releasing the original game, it was like 10 people. Even with that, even with them all doing testing, you can't catch everything because people do different things when they play. Like, it's only when you release it to the masses you're going to find more bugs. That's what we found, you know, that's what we realized. You know, we didn't realize that before. You know, we figured, oh yeah, the tester tested it, it works, so it's going to work for everybody. That's not true. You know, we've had people, you know, the game not work for two people out of all the people who, you know, played it. You know, so you're not going to know until it's released to everybody. So that's really the whole testing thing. And then, you know, we start thinking about a release. You know, it's a lot of planning that goes into that. You know, updating the site, making sure everything's good. You know, you have to build and compile the program. There's a lot of work that goes into it. But, you know, we like it. It's fun. You know, we do this for everybody. As Liam was saying, you know, we do this for the community. And, you know, especially, you know, our games are free, so, you know, we do this to provide, you know, games for everybody to play, and I think it's a great thing. You know, I have a lot of fun with it, even though it's only a side project. You know, I'm in college as a computer science major, so that's ultimately what I want to do, you know, go into programming or, you know, some kind of computer science-related career, and, you know, I think, you know, this is the kind of thing I want to do. I want to be a, you know...
Well, it teaches you teamwork. Yeah. How many developers, how many others are there with you involved in Aris Games?
Mainly it's me. It's Ryan Smith, the guy who Aris Games was named after, and Jason Smith. The two are not related, but... and then we have Derek Roberts, who helps us out with a lot of, like, the Linux stuff, and, you know, working with the server. He's great with that kind of stuff.
Now, I'm kind of a stats person, so I'm curious in which of these you can answer. I'm just curious, like, how many people, you know, play RS games, or kind of average playing time, or...
We have about 5,000 registered accounts right now, over 5,000. And on average, wow, I would say there are about 70 or 80 players on at a given time.
Certain times of the day?
I think the connection record right now is 157 on at once.
Yeah, that's maybe the downside when you have, you know, this volunteer, so either you gotta, I mean, it's free, so you don't have the revenue there, so it's done on the passion, or you can do contests or things to kind of push the envelope and get people to come out and I do big competitions, but...
Yeah, wait, what was that? Sorry.
No, I said, is there a certain time of the day? I was just saying it's kind of hard to, you know...
Oh, like when it's busiest?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say around, like, around now, at night.
Yeah, evenings U.S., right?
Yeah, Eastern U.S., around okay. nighttime, you know, that's when it gets, you know, over 100 most of the time. You know, it's all the games combined, all four games. You know, 100 or so people on the server. Yeah, I'd say now, around now is the busiest time, but there always seem to be people on. Like, I don't keep total track, you know, but, you know, generally I check periodically. I'm curious how many people are on right now. It's pretty easy to check. And I don't think there's been a time that I've seen, like, no one on. There's always some people playing. And we have people from all over the world, too. Like, just recently we added a feature so we can see where new players are registering from. And we've had people from all different countries, like, every country you can think of, like, you know, it's pretty amazing, like, all over the world, like, these places that people are registering from, like, wow, I didn't realize, like, people from these places even know about our games, and people who speak other languages are also playing, like, I guess, I'm not sure how, like, they know some English, or, I think somebody, you know, gave out a... You know, if you know the screen reader JAWS, a JDF file, a dictionary file, somebody's figured out a way to translate the game using a JDF file into Spanish, as far as I know, and I don't know, there might be other languages, like, nobody's, like, I happen to be, like, playing somebody in the game one day, and they mentioned it to me, but, yeah, that's how people are playing right now, like, translations is something we want to do, but just haven't figured out how yet. So it's something we hope to... We can't promise anything, obviously, but we hope to add translations, but... Yeah.
Very cool. Liam, let me get your take on it. Putting together a game and troubleshooting the bugs and...
Well, for me, it all depends on the kind of game. It depends what I'm doing or what I'm thinking about. I'm kind of one of these people where I just come up with ideas. A great example is on the free games page, there is Duck Hunt. And if you ever owned or played or had a family member who played the Nintendo, you'll probably remember Mario and Duck Hunt. And Duck Hunt was fun. You had a light gun that you pointed at the screen, or if you were a real jerk, you pointed it at a light bulb and got hit every time. And, you know, I was thinking, I'm like, you know, I really want to capture this essence in a game. So... you know, I sat down and actually I got my sister, she wanted to kill me. I hooked up the NES and I go, hey, can you play a few rounds of this? And so I actually recorded her playing it and went back and listened to how the sounds were and then, ripped them out of a ROM and then went and, reconstructed, somewhat accurately the Nintendo Duck Hunt complete with 8-bit sounds, music, and laughing dog. But I mean, that's just, you know, one thing. The other thing, Judgment Day started, I was actually sitting in class when I was in school and I was like, you know, I want to make a Space Invaders game. And what's kind of funny is a lot of my games, like Judgment Day was actually a code name. I was going to change the name of it and it just worked. So I'm like, we'll keep it, you know, Judgment Day. Great Toy Robbery, which is another fun little game. I wanted to kind of make a Christmas themed Super Egg Hunt game, you know, that I thought would be kind of cool. And actually, it is kind of fun. But the process varies per game. You know, you sit down, you have an idea, you try and I don't want to say storyboard because I'm not drawing storyboards and everything, but you try and figure out what you want the game to do and the point of the game. Because if you're going to make something, you need to know what it's going to do, how it's going to work, and all that good stuff. So you go, you make the game. There's a lot of testing, a lot of headaches, a lot of, you know, throbbing foreheads. But what I like to do is I have a beta team of about 9 people. And as I build, I give them stuff to play. And we're working from like Super Liam. When I started it, I actually said, all right, here's the first level. I want you to play this. Let me know what you think. And then I said, okay, here's the next level. Try this. Okay, I've changed this. Try this. So we spent hours upon hours of playing the games. And the funniest part about Super Liam was I don't even know how many times I played through it. I would pop open the game and just play through it to see how I felt about it. So if you've played it, you know, it takes about an hour and a half. So I played this game at least 15 times. I ate up a lot of time just playing it to see how I liked it. But I have a very hands-on approach, which is I play as I test, I play as I write, and I like to see how everything works. And I mean, that's how I do it. That's really my thing. And then, you know what? We get it out, and then there, if like someone's computer can't handle it or something else goes wrong, and so you have to go and debug that. But I have to say, and if you are maybe an artist or a musician, you'll understand this feeling. The best feeling in the world is knowing that you have a completed project and you can say, this is done, go enjoy it, go play it. It is really a good feeling. I remember when Super Liam came out, I'm not going to lie, we had gotten everything together, and I was playing through the game, and I got to the ending credits. If you've ever seen the ending credits or heard them, yeah, the big orchestral thing going on, and I have to admit, I lost it. I kind of broke down a little bit, and I said, I can't believe that I've done this. I just, it feels so good. I mean, it's a wonderful feeling, and it's one of the things that keeps me coming back. I love the feeling, and I love giving back, and I mean, the best thing that I get is on Twitter or, you know, through email, I get people that go, I love the game, this is fun, thank you, and, you know, that just makes it worth it, and, yeah, you know, it's like Michael Fair said earlier, you don't get rich doing this. It does not make good money. You can make a couple bucks. But, you know, I do it for the love of the game. I just love what I do. And, you know, people love what I do. And, hey, it's good enough for me.
Well, speaking of that, you do charge for these games, very affordable price. But what do you do to thwart piracy?
Well, I have a really interesting view on piracy. And I take a different view than a lot of developers take, and it goes like this. If you're going to pirate a game or a piece of software, it's what you're going to do. I can't really stop you. You know, we try so hard to lock things down. Like, I have the system in Judgment Day and Super Liam where you have to have a product ID, and then you have to get, you know, like a specific code from the computer. And it's ridiculous because, you know, it's not fair to the consumer. What if you want to go play it on your laptop? Then you got to get another product key and wait for me to generate it. And it's ridiculous. And you know what? It didn't stop piracy anyways. But this is a small community, and you know, quick message to people who want to pirate games, realize that every game that you've pirated, you've taken money away from somebody who has been working very hard, and it's not like I'm a big corporation. I'm one guy. You know, I live and breathe this stuff, and realize that, you know, piracy hurts. Now, I mean, it's one thing if you're a multi-million-dollar company, but I'm not. I'm one guy. I actually work a full-time job, and you know, I mean, it hurts me in the long run. And I've actually had some people, and I give credit to these people for having the nerve to tell me this. You know, I've had people say, you know, I pirated this game and I really liked it, so I bought it. And they said, I realized, you know, that you did a really good job and I wanted to support you. And that's great. And you know what? I purposely charge low prices so that people that are on, you know, low income or maybe don't have a lot of money can still enjoy them. I refuse to charge more than $30. And if I ever have to, I promise I'll make a really good reason to. But I want to make things affordable. I want everyone to be able to enjoy it. You know, and I'm really, if somebody's having a problem ordering something or having an issue, I'm always here to help. But please don't pirate our games. We work very hard, and, but I can't stop you. It's in the long run, I can't do anything to stop you. You'll do what you want to do. But, you know, think about it when you do it.
Very good point. You can talk about how many hours it takes you. You can keep track of that.
Oh, man, I can't even do, what do you mean, to keep track of, like,
just to build a game, just to create a game, Super Liam or Judgment Day. Or
I can't even give you an hour total. I mean, Super Liam took me, man, well, I started it back in like 2002, and I lost the source code, which actually was a blessing in disguise because I learned a lot on how to rewrite it and make it better. I would say it took me 9 months to a year, and I was in high school, so I had to kind of do it on, you know, after school and on weekends and stuff. But
it was such a good feeling to have it done. I mean, it just felt really good.
Okay, we'll open up here for questions, and the first one is from Michael Forzano, asking, do you plan to enable or create auto-update capabilities?
Yes, we do plan to have this. We're still working out like the exactly how to do this, but something we definitely want to add because it really helps the whole concept of the client, you know, the user not having to do anything to play a new game. You know, we don't release many client patches, but if we do add auto update, you know, it'll be easier to just, you know, oh yeah, we fixed some bug, just throw out an update. And, you know, it's just, the problem, the reason it's kind of hard is because of the cross-platform, and we have to, you know, work out how to update differently on each platform, but it's coming along, and it will hopefully be the next client.
We have another question for you, Michael, asking, are you looking for beta testers? So I can ask you first, and then Liam, kind of that process and what you're looking for in a beta tester. Obviously, when someone is really going to get in there and spend the time and the commitment to it, not just do it just to have a free version or an early version of a game.
Yeah, that's a good point. We do, as far as beta testers, we don't want people who are just going to say, oh yeah, I want to beta test so I can get this game earlier and, you know, get all new games. You know, we need people who are going to play, people who play regularly. If we already have some beta testers, but if we were going to take any new ones, you know, it needs to be people who play regularly, people who are really into the games, because that's how you find the bugs, by playing a lot. You know, you play once, you might not run into these bugs. You know, some of these bugs occur randomly, and, you know, obviously they're not random, they occur for a reason, but we don't know the reason, and sometimes they don't occur unless you play, like, a lot.
So at this point, you would, you know, either someone requested, you would go look and see if they're already on the server and how active they are, and maybe take that into consideration, not just someone who's on the first night and go, well, I don't know.
We could do that, yeah.
Exactly.
That would definitely be something we take into consideration. We want active people.
Let's see, next question says, can I suggest a game for the RS Game server?
Yes, definitely. You definitely suggest, but doesn't guarantee we'll add it. We get, you know, suggestions like, you know, some people suggest, like, oh, can you add a racing game? You know, that's not realistic for this platform. You know, we're doing board games and card games, so definitely, you know, we're happy to hear your suggestions, and we'll definitely consider them.
Yeah, you have to be realistic about time involved and the platform. And
yeah, the four games that are out there right now are the kinds of games that we'll be doing. Board games, card games, dice games, that sort of thing.
Next question asks, and I'll start with you, Michael, and then Liam, what other games are you thinking about doing? Can you talk about anything in the works?
Well, nothing in the works at the moment, but, you know, on my list of games I want to do, Poker, Texas Hold'em, for sure. Those are my two that I'm thinking of. Chess, that might be kind of a long shot, but it's definitely in the realm of possibility to add chess. I think that'd be very cool. So those are my ideas right now. You know, I'm open to suggestions. I'm sure the other members of our team have ideas, but I'm not sure what they are. Yeah.
What about you, Liam? What are you looking at? Are you just updating? Or?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that, because one of the things I want to do, and I haven't talked much about it, and there's a lot that needs to go into it, but I am really starting to look at the ability of bringing Super Egg Hunt to the iPhone. That's going to take a lot of work, but I want to do it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'm already paying for a Mac developer account anyways, so might as well use it. I have to kind of sit down with some people because Xcode has some limitations without getting on a geeky tangent. I would really love to do it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. You could use the tilt feature of the phone to move around. I think it would be great to have Super Egg Hunt in your pocket. I would love to play it on the train, to be honest with you.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be great.
Okay, interesting question. It says, what would you suggest to someone who has a game idea but doesn't know much about programming? Well, I don't think a game would be the first thing you'd want to do in terms of programming. But, or maybe it is. I mean, maybe some people just start with a very basic game.
Yeah. You have to figure out a language. Like, I mean, you have to learn how to program. yeah, I mean, there's BGT, the Blast Game Toolkit that's out there. There's other languages. You know, it's all going to be programming no matter which way you look at it. Which is, I'm not going to say it's hard, but it's definitely a learning curve. But I think, you know, if you put your mind to it and really get down to it, you can do that. And then, you know, you really have to think about how you're going to put your idea into code. And it's not easy, I'm not going to lie. It's definitely not easy, but if you really want to do it, I would say definitely go for it. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, any one of us developers could help point you in the right direction.
If I could jump in there, too, as someone who's thought of programming, I'm not a programmer. I'm an English major. That's why I did the Odyssey magazine in the first place, is I know I'm good with words, and I'm not so good at explaining to a computer what I mean. That gets really tricky. Not everyone has the mind for that. I'm kind of trying to cheat the process. I'm using something called Inform 7 to try and program what I'm eventually hoping to make. It's a long ways off. We're probably looking at a decade of development time. I still haven't finished the design document for it. And that's the thing. All of us developers will have different methodologies for approaching this stuff. But you know, the Inform 7 language, that's made for people who are want to make interactive fiction. I'm going to sort of abuse it and try to make a board game. But I still don't know for sure that I'll be able to pull this off. Like, that's the thing. When the rubber hits the road and I finally finish the design document and start actually trying to program it, I might hit a brick wall. That's the thing. I mean, it's really, programming is something you either sort of have the mind for or not. It's not for everyone. And that's you know, my only recourse there, and the only suggestion for people who find myself in the pitfall that I'm fearing I might be in, is then you have to look for people who do know what you don't know, and try to form a community to get what you want done, right? And that's the only other way to sort of approach it, unless you convince one of these developers that it would be worth their while to take your game idea and turn it into reality.
Well, Aaron asks, as far as games, would consider creating a pool game. So again, you know, it's again about looking at the genre, so to speak, or types of games that they're putting out. Are there any accessible pool games? I even thought about that.
To be honest, I don't know how to play pool, so I can't really tell you if that would be possible, but based on what I know about it, you're hitting a ball with a stick. No, I don't think this would be possible on our platform, unfortunately.
You'd have to differentiate the ball somehow. Like, that would, just thinking about the sonics behind something like that.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be possible to make a game like that, but on our server client setup, definitely not.
No one's ever attempted it in the years I've been the editor of Odyssey. Nothing's ever come across my desk about that.
Question here from Shay Martin asking if you guys have ever thought about showing your games at conventions or something, and something they were pondering.
Yes, that is something I really want to do. The logistics and the money would be expensive, but I would love to do that.
Yeah, I would definitely like to do that as well. You know, not sure this year probably won't happen, but maybe eventually, you know, it would be a great thing. You know, to get the word out beyond, you know, Twitter and the forum and the mailing list. And I'm sure, I mean, the word has gotten out beyond that. I guess it's just spread from person to person, but I think a convention would be a great way to really get it out there.
Yeah, it is a cost factor. It's very expensive to do conventions. I can comment on that firsthand, and in your case, now maybe to Liam, charging low cost for it, you might actually be able to move games, you know, throw them on CDs or something and move them there as a product. But a lot of times, so it's kind of hard.
I got to do one thing. I was actually hired to go teach a class in Utah about kind of game programming and design. I don't know why they picked me, but hey, it's all right. And I brought some demo discs with me, and it was a really fun experience, and I was able to pass them out, and it was a lot of fun. I wanted to get back really quick, Mike, if that's okay. You had asked really quick about programming, and I honestly think that if you really put your mind to it, you can. It's kind of like learning a piano. You just have to have the right resources and the right tools and the right mindset. I don't want to give you, like, I don't want to say to somebody, learn this language, learn that language, but figure out, you know, weigh the pros and the cons, figure out what you want to do. Do you want to be a game programmer? Do you really want to get into programming other types of applications?
And, you know, base your decisions on that.
Josh Loya asks a really good question for each of you. I'll also let any of you comment that would like to. What genre of game is most underrepresented?
Sports. I can say that categorically since the beginning of Odyssey, I've gotten more requests for sports games that just haven't been there. And lately, that's, you know, we've started to see bowling and a few exceptions, but sports is, because it's hard to do. I get, like, hockey. How would you do hockey really well? How would you do, you know, these team sports and things where you have to control multiple players? There have been some attempts, but overall, yeah, that's a genre that's really down there.
Or you could
It's funny you mentioned hockey, because I actually have kind of, I should really maybe like look at it again. I had kind of started building a hockey shootout type game, and I really want to sit down with it because I love hockey. I'm a hockey nut. I think I'm really a Canadian trapped in a North American man's body because a United States man's body, because seriously, I am like a hockey nut, and I really got into this. So I have to put up, I'll do another demo or something. You know, and again, that's why it's a great idea to follow Elworks Games on Twitter. I know it's kind of a cheap plug, but I post a lot of fun stuff.
See, I'm a Canuck who has no use whatsoever for hockey. So there you go.
Well, but then there's the other way to approach it where, Liam, I know you've just learned. You've played, you know, a quote-unquote mainstream or regular baseball game. And you've done demos of that.
Yeah, that's one thing that I do that a lot of others don't. I do play a lot of mainstream games. I've owned a number of consoles. And actually, I've got, like, I've been kind of pushing buttons on this Xbox controller for the last few minutes now. You know, I'm into all types of games, whether it's mainstream or whether it's not mainstream. I love games.
What do you think about, you know, technologies like Kinect, where you have motions and gestures, or the Wii? What do you think about?
I bought Kinect the day it came out. I'm not going to lie. I pre-ordered it from GameStop. I was home when it came. I set it up, and it's a lot of fun. I think it really opens up a lot of possibilities. The only problem is, and there's nothing we can really do to change this, guys. I'm really sorry. But game developers, especially, I should say, in the mainstream, really do not care about this market because it's not a viable market. It's very small. It does not provide anything. And the fact is there's no legal recourse to make games accessible. And in a lot of cases, it can't be done. You know, some people have been interested, especially Harmonix with Rock Band and stuff. But, I mean, the fact remains, a lot of times, you know, we are playing a sighted medium. And I it's like I've told people, and they hate when I say it. Sometimes you just have to accept it.
It's real painful when you see games like I did numerous times during my editorship with, that are so close to being accessible, but one thing renders them not. Like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That was a huge, probably the disappointment that sticks most in my mind. The U.S. Yep. version of that. The U.K. apparently did a version that read out the questions and you could actually play it. You know, once you got it started by yourself. But with the U.S. version, they printed the questions on card, and we just would just read the little introduction, and then you hear a flick, and up would come a question that, of course, screen readers couldn't read, and you would just be out of luck. And unfortunately, we didn't clue into that until after the issue was published, and a lot of people pounced on it as for Christmas presents, and I got a lot of letters after that saying, hey, this isn't accessible at all, and I'm like, I know, sorry, we just couldn't find that out in time, you know, it was one of the bigger disappointments that I've seen.
Well, I got to watch here, I got a lot of questions backing up here, so one, we have a request for RS Games to add maybe Pokemon, and of course you could certainly contact the developers directly and ask for those games. Another question coming up here talking about the concept of cloud, and I wonder if that maybe is a good way to, you know, assist in either being cross-platform where you build the game into the browser. Is that, how is that feasible, or where does that end? I mean, how much can you do in that?
Wait, I'm sorry, what's the question?
How would it be feasible? What are the limitations of doing cloud-based gaming, and what can you not do through the browser?
Through the browser,
I guess it doesn't have to be the browser. I mean, it could be any interface that you write.
You're limited to what you can send over the protocol. I mean, right? You know, we used you know, standard TCP IP, which is just, you know, a standard socket, which is, you know, it's not designed for, you know, fast paced like action games. And I mean, if we redesigned our server, maybe you could do, you know, like redo shooter games, multiplayer, stuff like that. I mean, our server can't do that. I mean, it's limited to, you know, the kinds of games that we do, you know, simple input output, like, you know, messages, sounds, streaming. You can do basic streaming. That's basically it. I mean,
all right,
you have 100 plus people on your server and you're sending messages back and forth, and I mean, it's, and as far as like, it goes back to what we were talking about before, you know, we're, you know, a four person team or whatever, and we're, you know, we have a pretty small server. You know, I know there are like video games out there that you know do use the cloud, and you know, they're big 3D multiplayer online game, but they're made by, you know, huge companies that, you know, have lots of resources and servers spread out over multiple locations, and, you know, they have more resources.
Right, it's something like World of Warcraft. It's going to be pretty hard for one or two lone blind programmers to put something like that together. Not maybe because they don't have the ability, but it's a time factor. It's a pretty complex. I mean, those games take years. Yeah. They're years in development.
Yeah, these people are doing it for a living also. They're, you know, dedicating, that's what they do. You know, Liam, me, and the rest of our team, you know, we do it as a side project.
Another question, so maybe just go ahead and address it. I would assume a basic email would get the job done, and they ask about how to sign up to be a beta tester.
Just send us an email, and you know, why you'd like to be a beta tester, and whatever else you might want to tell us, and we'll get back to you.
Byron asks, Liam, you play a lot of mainstream games. What have you learned by playing games designed for sighted people?
I've learned a couple lessons. Some of them are very hard lessons. One of them is that I don't think we'll ever be in a position to create games as involved as sighted games, only because your standard game is produced by a large team of people. Each person has their own specific design. You've got guys that design the engine. You've got guys that do, you know, various other programming tasks. It's very hard when it's just a small amount of people. But you know, I've learned a lot, and actually, you'll kind of see that I've taken ideas from games that I played, and I found ways to incorporate them. A great example is Judgment Day has a trophy system where you actually unlock achievements for doing certain things in the game, and those in turn will unlock other game modes and extra content to play.
All right, I have a question for you, Michael. Someone asks about costs to be an advertiser on RS Games.
Advertisements, we charge $15 a month for, doesn't matter how long it is, it should be kind of short because, you know, the advertisement being broadcast, you know, to you. So $15 a month, just email us with whatever you want to advertise, and we'll definitely be happy to let you advertise on our server.
Someone a little hostile about still having to go to the website, and again, he's already stated that they're working on an update process. I mean, I know that's something you have to be very careful about and make sure that all files are updated, because you certainly don't want to corrupt
an
installation.
I had that problem with the update, the auto updater I built for Super Egg Hunt. It was not quite ready for prime time, and I've had a couple issues. So, I mean, you know, guys, you got to be patient, because look, developers, we want to do it the right way, and we don't want to rush it out. And you would much rather have us do it the right way than having a situation like today where I pretty much had to tell everybody who installed the game, I'm sorry, you have to reinstall it because, you know, this isn't working correctly.
And we don't release many updates. We've only released 3 or 4 to the RS Games client. So you don't really have to go to the site that often.
Yeah, because, I mean, the client mainly, I mean, just talks to the server. And so in that case, it's really not something that has to be updated all that often. So there really is no need for, I mean, any sort of hostility about it. It's rare that it's updated. And you know, hey, if it is, Mike's going to tell you.
Yeah.
He's good about that.
Get it out there when it's updated to the list forum, the discussion list, the Twitter. You get it out there. And it's not often. So, you know, we'll get it. We'll get all the update eventually. But for now, just be patient. And, yeah.
I have someone sending an audio question, which I don't know you guys won't be able to hear, and I would ask folks to stay in the text realm only because they're on Skype, so I can't patch them without creating a feedback loop. But let's see what we have here. Okay, well, again, you have to... I'm sorry, Jeff, I got to abort your question. You got to, you know, when you start recording, you got to launch it. You got to spawn into it quickly. So we'll stay in the text question realm here. Let's see here. What about this flight simulator game? Have either of you played with that? I know some
folks, I have.
Okay. Is it out of the fun. Price range of a lot, or is it pretty good?
Well, the game is, I believe he's charging $50 for it now, which it's high for a game, but it's pretty cool. And I have to say, if you want something that's pretty realistic as far as flying goes, he's got it on the mark pretty well. He's got everything. You've got RPM, you've got your angle of descent and descent, you've got your airspeed, and I'm not a pilot. Be glad that I'm not a pilot, okay? But, you know, I mean, it's really cool.
So you definitely recommend if someone's interested in that, because that kind of got my attention. Well, that would be kind of cool to do the whole flight simulation.
Yeah, you know what? I really would. There's very few games, Mike, that I won't recommend, because one of the things that, and I have people ask me this too, they're like, well, why do you play other people's games? I mean, aren't you guys in competition? No, we're not in competition. You know, like I go on RS games all the time. Heck, I was playing Uno last night. I think the thing is we're all a community. We want to provide games for people. We don't compete. We may not agree with everything that the other person does, but you know, the fact is, hey, we're here for you guys. We're not here for us. When it comes down to it, we're here for you.
Now, Aaron asks about accessible iPhone games. So there's actually quite a few. I mean, there's different portals, AppleVist.com. But what are you? I'll start with you, Liam. What are you playing on the iPhone?
I play, and if you've never seen it or heard it, it's amazing. It's called Papa Sangre, and it is an iPhone game solely based on audio. And the guys did an awesome job on it. It is some of the best production work I think I've ever heard. And from someone who does production, I mean, this is, I was blown away. I was like, wow, you know, I quit. It was beyond anything I could imagine making. I also play there. Bop It was just recently released by EA, and that's not bad. Some people play Aurify, which is another audio type based game. There's not a lot of audio games for the iPhone right now. One of the problems, again, I bring up Xcode. There's issues with, designing and stuff, and I really need to sit down and bump heads with some iPhone people. I just haven't had the time. And you know, one of the things too for me, and I know Mike's in college, I work full time, and I work full time programming, and so you come home and, well, you don't really want to program, you kind of want to sleep. So I don't have the time to devote like I'd like to. I wish I had a clone, because my clone would be programming games, and then I'd be making money.
I found a couple interesting things for the iPhone sphere lately, because I've just gotten one myself, and they're actually in the text-based realm. I found, first of all, Frotts works amazingly well on the iPhone, and you can import your old, if you have old Infocom games, you can import those in and have Zork on your iPhone, which is a great way to make typing, learning how to type on that thing a little more palatable. The other thing I just discovered today, like actually yesterday, the Shamutanti Hills. It's the first book in the sorcery series of the Fighting Fantasy books by Jackson and Livingston, Steve Jackson and Ian Livingston. And it's actually based on the original, it is the original book transcribed in a way that makes it actually completely accessible by mistake. I don't think they realized this right off the bat. And it works quite well with voiceover so far. So I've been really happy with that.
I got a question here asking about, I don't quite understand it, but he was asking about the partition, the native partition.
He was asking if you have a data partition with Windows 7, does that affect performance? No. Partitions generally won't affect performance.
So, but I want to redirect that. What does affect performance? Maybe certain, you know, like things like Norton or McAfee, or things that block ports, firewalls, or just like netbooks, or what? Causes you problems.
I mean, all the RS games Flying does is connect on an outgoing port, you know, to one port. So as long as your, you know, firewall doesn't block, you know, the outgoing port, it shouldn't interfere. So you know, doesn't listen on a port, doesn't, you know, do anything like that. So it's pretty simple. So I don't think you'll have any problems.
Aaron asks if there's any way to pay for your products at Works other than going through PayPal.
I'm sorry,
I should let you answer it, but I mean, you can pay with a regular credit card. You don't have to even have a PayPal account.
Yeah, I was going to say, PayPal does give you the option. PayPal's a little frustrating, I understand, because it's, you know, it's not the most user-friendly system. I mean, I've looked at ways that I can make it better. But I mean, you know, PayPal works. And again, if you have problems, I will sit down with people and help them when I've got time. I wish I had more time to devote to it. When I first started LWorks, I actually had a support line you could call during the day because I was home during the day, and I was able to actually help people order and answer questions and stuff. And it was great, but I got my job and there went that. But again, you know, hey, you take the good with the bad. Now I'm making money. And, now I actually, you know, can afford to do more things with my games. I've been able to sink a little money into sound libraries and other stuff that back then I might not have been able to afford.
Well, a lot of questions. We've already actually just surpassed our hour. Someone asked about an accessible sports game for the Wii. That was supposed to happen and didn't, or...
Mike, one quick thing I did forget to mention, though. I actually am working with AT guys to bring credit card processing over. They are offering to do it as well. So there should hopefully soon be a second option for those who don't want to use PayPal.
Yeah, and you have to understand that PayPal is just a necessary evil when you're a very small time, you know, your sales are very low, because a lot of these providers require minimum sales, so it costs them a lot. And of course, they would have to pass that cost along to you. But PayPal now, certainly you can, you know, pay with your credit card and not even have a PayPal account. So there's a lot of, well, we put the wraps on the hour. Give you guys one shot at final comments here. I'll start with you, Liam.
I don't really know what more to say. L-Works.net, please check out my games. I'm a one-man show. It's what I do. You can follow LWorks on Twitter, LWorks Games. And, hey, you know, if you like the games, if you don't like the games, if you have comments, you have questions, don't hesitate to email or send messages on Twitter. I may not seem like it, but I'm here for you, because you are what makes this worth it.
Okay, and Michael with RS Games, any final comments, or just give your contact information?
Yeah, well, it was great to be here, and definitely try out our games. We have our actual web domain, so you can visit us at rsgames.org, or follow us on Twitter at rs_games, or just drop us an email at rsgames@gmail.com if you have any comments or suggestions, bug reports, anything. So definitely try out our games if you like them. You know, that's great. We're here for you. And, you know, even though, you know, we're all in school and, you know, I'm in college and everything, we're pretty busy, but, you know, we try and, you know, devote as much time to RS Games as we possibly can. You know, we'll fix bugs, add new games. We're here. And definitely give it a try. If you haven't tried our games yet, I think you'll definitely like them a lot. So check out rsgames.org, and thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome, and it's very big on SamNet. We have voice chat, and I assume you probably have different people use TeamTalk and Ventrilo and different ways where they can talk to each other in real time as they're playing. Very big on our network. Michael Fair, your final thoughts this evening, sir?
Well, I'd just like to thank you for having me on. It was a blast just finally getting to chat with these developers. You know, it's one thing to cover them with an email magazine. It's quite a extra special treat when you actually get to chat with these folks live. I've always found the developers to be almost more interesting than the games in a lot of cases. Just the people you run into in this community, it can be fascinating. And now I've got a blog, www.michaelfair.blogspot.com. Anything I discover will eventually end up there. I like my blog. I also am on Twitter, but don't tend to tweet overly much, so I might be a bit of a boring leader. But M Fair is the tweet, and Fair is F as in Frank, E-I-R. So if you want to follow me, that's great. Welcome aboard. And hope to see you again in future game-related chats.
All right, great. I thank all of you tonight for joining us. This is part one. We will certainly come back and get some other developers and take some different approaches here as I research and found links, found many other people that are doing some interesting things. We thank all of you. And, of course, the discussion will continue for those who are members of SAMNet. You can go into the tech room and continue further. If you're not, you can go get a 7-day trial account at www.sato.go. That's SATOGO.com and continue the discussion there. So until we meet again next week, as we do this month in Access Tech, or of course join us for March 1st for Podcast 62. But until we meet again, let's stay connected and stay directed.